Excellent, excellent. Well, good morning and welcome. Yeah, let's. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And happy Mother's Day to all you moms out there. We just celebrate the moms out there. Hopefully you took advantage of the tables that we have set up for you in the entryway there and the special food that we have set aside for you. If you're not a mom and you try to take that food, they will tackle you. But today, as we celebrate moms and as we walk through this Sunday together, we're continuing a conversation called the Love Project. If you haven't been with us, we've been looking at how Jesus, as he steps into our story, both with his life and with his teaching, he steps in and he begins to shift our understanding of love. One of the primary things that Jesus does in our life is that he redefines love. He steps in and says, you think that love looks like this, but it actually looks like this. You think that love works like this, but it actually works like this. And so for the past couple weeks, we've been breaking that down and looking at how that works out in our lives and inside of our relationships. We saw how we see love as something that happens to us, but he sees love as something that happens through us. That we see love as a feeling that moves us to act, but he sees love as actions that impact our feelings. We looked at how our vision of love is spontaneous. His is intentional. We looked at how our vision of love is built around us, but his is built around those that he loves. We've been looking at how in our vision of love, understanding is kind of a means to an end, but in his vision of love, understanding is actually one of the really powerful ways that we get to love one another. And today, as we come together, we're going to look at the final shift. It's not that this is all there is. It's just that we've run out of time in our series. And so today, we're going to look at kind of the final shift. We have one more week that we're going to be talking about the Love Project. But next week is kind of special because we're going to walk through how everything that we have talked about and everything that we looked at impacts dating. So as we've walked through this series, a lot of what we've talked about has been in the context of pre-existing relationships or inside of marriages. And so next week, we're going to break it down and just look at, okay, how does everything that we've talked about, how does it impact dating? Now, if you're here and you are married and you think, oh, it doesn't apply to me. Next week doesn't apply to me. I'm married. I don't date anymore. I'll pray for you this week because you're in big trouble. In serious, serious trouble. We're going to look at this a little bit next week as well, that when dating ends, in a lot of really, really powerful ways, when dating ends, so does your relationship. And we're gonna look at how all of these different shifts impact dating for all of us. But before we get there, I want to walk you through one final shift. One final shift that I think Jesus introduces to our vision of what love should look like and what relationships look like. Because you see, our vision of love, and this is probably one of the aspects of our vision that I dislike the most. That just drives me insane. Our vision of love is built on the idea of finding the one. Our vision of love is built on the idea that there is someone out there. There is someone out there who so perfectly complements me that if I can just find them, we will never have any trouble. We will never have any problems. We will live happily ever after. Exactly. We all know it. Why? Because it's a part of, even if you would say, no, I don't really believe that. It's amazing how ingrained it is in the way that we think. And even if you would never say it that way, and even if you've worked to pull yourself out of that, I find that it impacts almost every single one of us, and almost all of us have a vision of love that has been impacted by this idea that if I can just find the right one, you just have to find the one. You know you know what I'm talking about. The one that gets you. Oh, they get me. They just get me. We just get one another. I have no idea what that means, but we actually say this. We don't know what it means, but if I can just find the one. Even their weaknesses work with my strengths and weaknesses. Even their flaws, they complement my flaws. If we can just find the one, we can live happily ever after. We don't actually know how to find the one. We don't know what that looks like. But we've been told that when we find them, we'll know. When you find them, you'll know. You just know. How do you know? You just know. You just got to find the one, and then you'll know. This is what the great philosophers of our time have told us. This is what the great philosophers of our time have told us. John Mellencamp, Mary J. Blige, Kenny Chesney. The great and all-knowing Walt Disney. Just find the one. If you can find the one, you'll live happily ever after. How do I know? You just know. Which is what some of you tell people. You tell them, I met her and I just knew. I knew from the moment that I met her. I knew from the moment that I met him. But listen, for those of you who are single, let me give you a little insight on what's happening when they say that to you. Okay? This is what you need to know. They said that about everyone they've ever dated. And if you say that about everyone you've ever dated, eventually you'll be right. Eventually you'll be right. And so when they say that to you, just nod and smile. Just, yeah, exactly, oh, I'm sure. Just like the one before her and just like the one before her. Eventually they'll be right. And for those of you who keep saying that, stop. You're ruining other people's lives. We've bought into it. And even if we don't fully subscribe to it, almost all of us, our vision of love has been impacted by the idea that you just find the one. And if you can just find the one, you'll live happily ever after. And your future has everything to do with finding the right one. Which is why for some of you, you're still single. Because you're looking for the perfect one. And which is why for others of you, you're thinking about walking away. Because you're looking at the struggles and you're saying, I must not have found the right one. I must not have found the perfect one. Because if you can find the right one, well, then you live happily ever after. God's vision of love couldn't be more different. God's vision of love embraces imperfect people that need to grow. God's vision of love is not, listen, even when it comes to a relationship with him, God's vision of love is not step into this relationship with me and we're going to live happily ever after. That's not what he says. For some of you, this is why you walked away from the idea of Jesus, because somebody told you that if you step into a relationship with Jesus, you're just going to live happily ever after. And then you stepped into a relationship with Jesus and you found it doesn't work that way. Because someone lied to you, not because Jesus lied to you, because Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus doesn't say, step into this relationship with me and we're going to live happily ever after. No. Jesus' vision of love is very different. Jesus' vision of love is about people who grow together. Not about people who find the right one and live happily ever after. No. Even inside of our relationship with him, Jesus says, I want you to step into this relationship with me and then we're going to grow into what I have in store for you. As a matter of fact, Jesus says, if you want to experience the fullness of my love, it won't happen just because we step into this relationship with one another. It will happen because of the fact that you continue to follow me and you grow into it. Peter, who's one of the individuals in Jesus' life who's closer to him than anyone else, during his ministry, almost no one spent more time with Jesus than Peter. And as Peter is writing to the church and trying to help them understand this journey with Jesus. Listen to what he says, 1 Peter chapter 2. He says, like newborn babies, you must crave pure spiritual milk so that you will grow into a full experience of your salvation. He says, on this journey, you're not just going to step into this relationship with Jesus and experience the fullness of his love. You're not going to step into it and experience the fullness of your salvation. You're not going to step into it and live happily ever after. He says, no, it's about growing together. And God's vision of love, it's not magic. It's about us growing together with him and following him and experiencing it more and more and more, the more that we grow. Our vision of love is find the right one, you're going to be good. His vision of love says, no, you grow into love. You grow into love. His vision of love embraces growth. Embraces growth. I know I say it a lot, but I don't think we have fully begun to realize the depth of the reality that God creates everything to grow. Everything God creates, it grows because it embraces, God embraces growth. And as he invites you into this, he says, all right, let's grow together. And love is growing together. He doesn't just talk about this in terms of relationships. He typically talks about, and God teaches most of what he teaches us about love inside of the context of the church, how we love one another together as a family and a body. And he says, here's what I want for you to do. I want you to grow together. His picture of the church, this is another huge mistake that we make. For those of you who are exploring faith, some of you misunderstand this. You think that God's dream for the church is that it will be perfect. That's not God's dream for the church at all. God's dream for the church is that it would grow together. God's not disappointed with the fact that the church has to grow. He expects it. It's what he wants to happen. And he presents us with an idea of love that where we grow together. He says, love isn't something you find. Love is something that you grow into together. And a huge part of how you love is growing together. Which is why, for those of you who are single, one of the things that you need to pay attention to most when you're looking at, okay, who is it that I'm going to be attracted to? What am I going to be attracted to? Who is it that I'm going to spend my life with? You need to pay attention to whether or not they're passionate about growth. Whether or not they're passionate about growth. It doesn't just have to do with where they are. It has to do with where they're going. Exactly what we talked about last week. Are they passionate about growth? Because again, if you walk into it and you say, okay, where are they? Do we fit well together? Are we compatible? I hear people talk about this all the time. Do we have chemistry? Are they compatible? The idea of pursuing someone that you're compatible with and that you have chemistry with is a little bit tricky because, again, it's based on the idea that you're going to be stagnant, that you're not going to change. My wife and I were talking about this just last night, and she was talking to me about how they say that the hardest year in marriage is usually the seventh year. And I don't know if you know the science behind this, but one of the realities about you is that you completely change every 7 years. It actually has to do with cell regrowth and everything that goes into that. And so you actually change every 7 years. And so one of the things that's really tricky about the idea that I'm going to find someone who I'm compatible with is that in 7 years, you're not going to be the same and they're not going to be the same. Therefore, if you don't find someone who's a learner and a grower, if you don't find someone that you can grow together with, you will grow apart. And for those of you who are single, one of the things that you really have to pay attention to is, okay, are they someone who's growing? Don't just find someone who is where you think they should be, but find someone who's a grower, who's learning. Now, let me just say this. I'm not saying that character doesn't matter. Don't mistake me there. God clearly teaches that intimacy needs to be tied to character. So don't come up to me after the message and use this as an excuse to date a fool. Don't come up to me after the message and say, you know what? You're right. I need to pursue someone who's a grower. And he used to be a complete fool, but now he's only like 99% a fool. He's clearly growing. No, it's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. If you marry a fool, your life will be hell. There's no way to escape it. You won't be the exception. The guy says, no, love isn't about finding the perfect, it's about growing together. Growing together. Find someone that you can grow together with. I frequently tell people, because people say, how did you know that Anna was the one that you want to spend the rest of your life with? And the reality is this. I realized that I would not experience Jesus as much without her as I would with her. I could not grow as well without her as I could with her. I couldn't live this mission as well without her as I could with her. And God said, you have to shift your vision. Pay attention to growth. And then as we're in this together, we grow into love together. It's not just individually. It doesn't just apply individually that it doesn't matter where you are or where you're headed, but it actually applies to your relationship as well, right? That you get to embrace growth together, that we're going to, my vision isn't that we're going to live happily ever after. My vision is that we're going to grow together. So if that's the shift in vision, then what's the how? If that's the what, that we need to shift our vision from happily ever after, I'm going to find the right one, to, no, I'm going to grow with someone. We're going to grow together. If that's the shift in vision, then what's the how? Now, clearly there's some very obvious ones that has to do with pursuing growth ourselves. And in just a couple of weeks, we're going to kick off a series called Essentials, and we're going to talk about how this summer you can grow. How this summer you can actually move forward. For so many of us, our summers, they set us back as opposed to helping us move forward. And we walk into the summer and we live for the moment instead of living for the rest of our lives. And so we set our lives back because of the fact that we live for the moment. We're going to talk about how as you walk into the summer, you can come out of the summer better than you went into it. How we can grow throughout that time and the unique things that summer offers us to be able to grow in our relationship with God and our relationship with one another. But today I want to take you to a unique how. One that maybe isn't quite so obvious. And I want to take you back to a passage that, if you're a part of our Rhythms conversation here at Hoboken Grace, you've already been exposed to, because every month here at Hoboken Grace, one of the things that we do is that we practice rhythms. You see, we believe that we are forgetful people, and therefore we have to be reminded of who God is over and over and over again in our lives. So one of the things that we do is that we have these rhythms. It's something that we walk through on a daily basis that reminds us not just once, but multiple times throughout the day of who God is and what God's done. And every month we introduce a new meditation passage, a passage for us to come back to time after time, day after day after day after day, and just kind of allow it to seep into the cracks and crevices of our life, for us to not just know it, but for us to live it. And this month at Night of Prayer, I introduced this passage, and coming out of that, I've just been feeling like God has been pulling me back to it and pulling me back to it. And as I was preparing for today, I just felt him leading me back to that conversation and just saying, listen, don't just introduce it at Night of Prayer, but I want for you to share it with everyone, because it's a huge aspect of how we grow together. And so I want to take you to this passage. It's found in 1 Thessalonians. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, it says this. It says, for God chose to save us through our Lord Jesus Christ, not to pour out his anger on us. Christ died for us so that whether we are dead or alive when he returns, we can live with him forever. So he starts off and he's talking about what Jesus has done for us, how he took our place, how he took the punishment that we deserved. And he's talking about what that's made possible for us, the relationship that we can have with him, how we can be with him forever. And then he says this, he says, so encourage each other and build each other up just as you are already doing. He says, let me just call you guys back to the reality of what Christ has done for you. And then he challenges, now I want for you to encourage one another. And here's the reality of it. When you realize what Christ has done for you, the natural outworking of that is to encourage others. To encourage others with the hope that you have. When you realize the hope that you have, your natural reaction is to encourage others with it. Now, let me just pause for a second. Because here's the thing. We talk about hope the wrong way, or we think about hope the wrong way, because our culture has an idea of hope that is not at all like God's idea of hope. Which is why for some of you, you read through the scriptures and you hear what God says and it doesn't really make sense to you and it's not really hopeful to you because of the fact that you misunderstand this word and what God means by it. Because when our culture talks about hope, they talk about it like a wish. So when you say that you're hoping for something, it means you're wishing for something. So some of you are hoping that you'll get a date one day, right? You're hoping. What are you saying? You're wishing. It's not really based on anything. You're wishing. I'm wishing. I'm hoping for something. So when God talks to you about hope, it's not that encouraging. It's not that encouraging because it's just a wish. Well, okay, so I wish for something. Great, but that doesn't really encourage me. God doesn't talk about hope that way. That's not how he uses the word. For God, hope is not wishing for something, it's looking forward to something. So when God talks about your hope, he's not saying, oh, you wish for something. He's saying that you can look forward to something. This is really important for those of you who are exploring faith and exploring who Jesus is and what he's, because sometimes you hear this idea that we have hope and you think, what are you okay, so you wish for something. You want me to buy into a wish? No. That's not the way that God talks about it. Let me illustrate it for you this way. The difference between our culture's idea of hope and God's idea of hope is this. Our culture's idea of hope is, I'm running out of money. I hope someone sends me some money. And you're wishing. You have nothing to base it on. You're just hoping that something works out. God's idea of hope is very different than that. God's idea of hope, when God talks about hope, he talks about it this way. You're running out of money, and your parents have called you and said the check's in the mail. Well, now I have hope. Now I'm hoping. Does it mean you're wishing? No, I'm not wishing. I know it's in the mail. I'm waiting to experience something. And so for those of you who are exploring who Jesus is and this whole idea of faith, when we talk about hope, we're not saying that we wish for something. It means we're waiting for something. And the reality is this. The reality is this, is that God has stepped into our lives and said, no, the check is in the mail. And the reason why you trust your parents when they say the check is in the mail is because of how they have interacted with you in the past. And so you trust them based on how they've proven themselves to be faithful, unless you have bad parents and then you don't. But for most of you, you do. You trust them because of that. The same thing is true for us. Because of the fact that God, from the very beginning of creation, said, no, I'm going to send someone who's going to take your place. I'm going to send a rescuer. And over time, he said, I'm going to send a rescuer. And then Jesus shows up. And not only does Jesus show up, but Jesus shows up and says, I'm going to give my life for you. And 3 days later, I'm going to walk out of that grave. And I'm going to conquer sin, and I'm going to conquer death. The reason that we have hope isn't because we wish. It's because of the fact that God has proven himself to be faithful, and then Jesus said, this is what I'm going to do, and he did it. So when he says the check's in the mail, we know the check's in the mail. And not only did he do it when he gave his life for us, but when we watch the stories that we watch on Sundays and we record the different stories of the people who are part of our community, you see him doing it over and over and over again. It's God's faithfulness. It's God's faithfulness which builds our faith and allows us to be able to not wish for something, but to have hope because we know that he's faithful with what he says that he's going to do. And he said the check's in the mail. He said that if you've stepped into this relationship with him, that you are going to be with him forever. That's our hope, not a wish. That is what we are looking forward to, the reality that we are looking forward to. And the writer of Thessalonians, he steps in and he says, let me call you back to your hope. And he says, and now here's what I want for you to do. I want for you to encourage one another. I want for you to encourage one another. Now, again, I need to redefine this for you. I need to redefine this for you because we think about this differently than God thinks about this. So if I were to step into your life and say, I want for you to encourage one another, you're immediately going to look for something good in the people around you. So when we typically talk about encouragement, we talk about it as praise. In other words, I see something good in you and I'm going to encourage that. Or I see you do something good and I'm going to encourage that. Our idea of encouragement, listen, come here. Our idea of encouragement is based on the other person. So I want to be more encouraging. I'm going to look for good things in the lives of the people around me, and I'm going to call those out. One of the things that God calls us to do in each other's lives more than anything else is to encourage. But the problem is we don't understand the biblical idea of encouragement. So we think that he's saying, look for great things in the lives of the people around you and call those out, encourage one another. I'm not saying that that's not important, but that's not actually the way that God primarily talks about encouragement. God doesn't primarily talk about encouragement as being based on the other person. Look at the passage. He doesn't say, look at all the great things you guys are doing, encourage one another. He doesn't say, you guys are crushing it, encourage one another. He doesn't say, you guys are amazing at loving, encourage one another. No. What's his foundation for encouragement? Look what Jesus has done. See, our idea of encouragement is based on the other person. God's idea of encouragement is based on Jesus. He says, I want you to encourage one another. With what? With how great you are? No. With what he's done. I want you to step into one another's lives, and I want you to speak the truth of what Jesus has done over and over and over and over again. Now, let me just point out to you really quickly, in case you're not noticing this. This makes encouragement much easier. If encouragement is based on the other person, it can be difficult at times. Because for some of you, if I were to step in and say, listen, you need to encourage the person that you're in a relationship with, you would say, oh, there's not a lot there. You would. And sometimes it's because you're not paying attention, but sometimes it's true. If your vision of encouragement is based on the other person, if your idea of encouragement is based on the other person, sometimes you're going to struggle with it, and you're going to struggle with it when they need it the most. You're going to struggle with it when they need it the most. You're going to struggle with it when they're at their worst. But his idea of encouragement is different. His idea of encouragement is based on what Jesus has done. And that becomes more powerful the more they struggle. And it doesn't matter where they are. You can speak the truth of what Jesus has done into their life. And so even in the midst of their greatest struggle, you can call them back to the hope that they have. Even in the midst of their greatest struggle, you can share with them the truth of how Jesus loves them. In the midst of their greatest struggle is probably your greatest opportunity to communicate to them the depth of God's grace. And God says, I want for you to encourage one another. Now, if your vision of love is finding the right person and it's happily ever after, encouragement isn't all that important. It's just kind of a nice thing on the side. But, if your vision of love is that we're growing together, then encouragement and what he's talking about in this passage becomes crucial. Why? Because if we're going to grow together, we have to learn how to encourage one another. And not just encourage with one another with how great we are, but encourage one another with the hope that we have. And what Jesus has done for us. God's idea of love, his vision of love, is a community of people, not just two people, a community of people who are growing together. Who are growing together and over again are stepping into one another's lives and speaking the truth, not about how great we are, but about how great he is. And encouraging one another so that we can grow together. In the stories that we tell, the greatest moment is when they find one another. That's why the movie ends there. In the stories that he tells, it's the life that we live together. Because you grow into love. You don't just find it. And if we're going to grow together, we have to learn how to encourage one another with the truth of who God is. Now here's the thing about this. It's tricky. It's tricky because oftentimes when you say these things and when you speak the truth of who God is into the lives of the people around you, it comes across as cliche. So have you ever been in the midst of a conversation with someone and they're speaking the truth of what Jesus has done for you, and you want to punch them in the face? And they step in and they say something like, well, you know, Jesus never wastes a pain. And you think to yourself, good, he won't waste the pain that I'm about to bring into your life. Or I just want you to know they're in a better place. And you think, I would like for you to be in a different place. It's tricky. It's tricky. But we need to wrestle through this. We need to wrestle through this because here's the thing. Here's the thing. You need to know the truth that God is using everything in your life. Everything in your life for your good. You need that hope. It's not something that we're wishing for. It's something that we're looking forward to. And you need that. So we can't just let those things go and just say, well, I'm not going to say it because it's going to come off as cliche. We can't do that. It's too important. So then what do? How do we speak those things into one another's lives? I want to invite you into an experiment with me. I don't actually know the answer to this. I've been struggling with this for about a month, just wrestling through, like, how do we deliver it in such a way that it doesn't offend the other person, but it allows us to grow together, that it encourages the other person, that allows them to be able to see the hope. And here's what I think. Here's what I think, and here's what I want to invite you into. I think the difference is this. The difference is this something that you're saying so that you can avoid the other person's pain? Or is this something that you're saying as you're engaging the other person's pain? What I mean by that is this. Sometimes we use these little sayings like, oh, listen, God's going to use everything for your good. Or, you know, God never gives you anything that you can't handle. These things. We say these things not because we're engaging the pain with someone. We say these things to keep ourselves away from the pain. Because we want to be able to move past this moment and we're uncomfortable and we're not really sure what to say, so we're just going to throw this thing out here because it sounds really good. And we use it as kind of a wall or a barrier because I don't want to actually feel that pain. I don't, you know, this is weird. So we throw these things out there. As opposed to actually stepping into the pain with someone. and experiencing, there's a big difference. There's a big difference between hearing that, listen, God is going to use everything in your life for your good. There's a big difference between hearing that from someone who's just moving past you to hearing that from someone who's actually experiencing it with you. And one of the things that God calls us to do in one another's lives is not just to encourage, but to bear one another's burdens, to weep with one another and to laugh with one another. He says, I want you to step into it with them. And I think one of the big differences and one of the ways that it can be much more received is if we actually make sure that as we're communicating that truth, that we're experiencing it with them. But the other side of it is this. The other side of it is this. Not only do we have to work, okay, how do I deliver it in such a way that they know that this isn't just a cliche, I'm not just moving past them, but I'm experiencing that with them. But then the other side of it is how we receive it. We also have to get better at receiving it. I was incredibly convicted about this last night. Because I thought about all of the different times that people had tried to speak the truth of who God was into my life. But rather than actually receiving it, I just wrote it off as a cliche. I just wrote it off as, or I was offended by it. And sometimes people say things to me that are just really dumb. And so, you know, if you've done this, it's fine. But sometimes people will come up to me after the service and be like, hey, Chris, that one was really good. That one was really good. And I'm thinking, thank you? Maybe? Or all the different things that people have told me concerning my son, Kale, and Down syndrome and being a parent with Down syndrome. But last night I was so incredibly convicted, because the reality is that for most of the people who are saying those things, they were loving me. But rather than me being loved by it, I got all wrapped up in whether or not they said it right. I got all wrapped up in whether or not they use the right words. What if we embrace growing together? And so you don't have to say it right. I can still experience the heart behind it, even when you don't. I was so incredibly convicted because I felt like God was saying to me, you've missed out on so much of the love that those around you wanted to share with you in those moments. And if you're going to try to do this inside of relationships, if we're going to try to speak the truth of who God is into one another's lives inside of relationships, it's going to be tricky, and sometimes they're not going to say it right. And sometimes it is going to come off as a little cliche. But what if that doesn't matter? What if we could embrace this on both sides of the conversation? What if we could embrace it and say, no, I'm going to work to try to experience it with them and to speak the truth of who God is as best as I possibly can, but from the other side to be able to say, we're growing together, and so even when they don't say it perfectly, I'm going to trust their heart and I'm going to be loved in that moment. And I'm going to experience the hope that I have in that moment, even if it wasn't worded perfectly. The amazing thing about grace
is that God calls us into a relationship where we're not going to get it right all the time. And he still loves us. And here's the thing that's really amazing, is that he still is loved by us, even when we don't get it perfect. What if we could do that for one another? What if our vision of love wasn't that we find the right person, that we find the right people, but that as a people, we grow together? It's an amazing opportunity that God has given us to speak the truth of what he's done in one another's lives over and over and over and over and over and over again. Let's make sure we don't miss it. Let's embrace that. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you for how you've loved us. I thank you for the amazing way that you encourage us. For so many of us, we miss this as we come to your word because we're looking for the wrong things. But the truth is that throughout your word, over and over and over and over again, you are encouraging us with the incredible hope that we have because of what you've done. Father, we want to not only experience that with you, but we want to experience that with one another. To embrace the reality that we get to grow together, the beauty of the fact that we get to grow together. And in that, to encourage with all that we have. In Jesus' name.